This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
I'm Morgan.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week we are on episode 75, where we are covering the murder of Seth Jackson.
And the murder of Seth Jackson took place when five Florida teenagers and young adults decide that a love triangle that created a Facebook feud is enough reason to murder their 15-year-old friend in cold blood.
Yeah, this one is going to be a doozy, guys.
It really is. And also, I feel like 75 episodes, it's kind of a milestone. We're so close to 100.
I know. They did like the Spotify Unwrapped thing, mm-hmm. you know, and they do it for podcasters too. And we, whenever it came out, had recorded 52 episodes, which means at least one episode per week in the year.
So wow.
Look at us go. Even with taking a break off, we still managed to produce 50 something episodes.
Nice.
Look at us go.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. Before we get into today's episode, what are you binging, Sarah?
So this week I am binging I'm going to call him a YouTuber. Mm-hmm. I think he's technically an influencer, but his name is Joshua Weissman.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The cooking guy,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
So he is just so funny, and he has a cooking YouTube channel, and, you know, you see his stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
But he teaches you, like, so many different things. Like, he taught me how to make a cheap charcuterie board, like, how to make, like, the McRib at home, and how to do stuff for cheap, and, like,
yeah,
it's all, like, cooking things that are, like, relevant to my life, like, mm-hmm. things I would actually do, not just watching a cooking show that, like,
right.
I'm like, ah, that's cool, but I'd never fucking do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let me, shave this truffle over my pasta.
Exactly. You know? And I think he's hilarious.
Yeah.
He, for people who don't know, every time he turns around, he just zooms in the camera on his butt. Or he'll, like, smack his butt or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that he's only 21.
Mm.
And when he was overweight as a child. And when he was 16, he started, learning about nutrition and health and started eating healthier. And he lost 100 pounds at the age of 16.
Mm-hmm.
And by 17, he produced a cookbook with his recipes and stories and everything. And that was called The Paleo something or other. I had it here for like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's the Slim Palette Paleo Cookbook.
Mm.
And so now I'm like, well, now I need a cookbook, even though I'm not paleo. But yeah, he's really entertaining, and the stuff really, like, resonates with me. And so, yeah, I've really enjoyed watching him, like, for the past week or so.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. What is your binge this week?
My binge this week is going to be another video game called The Last of Us. And it is older. It came out in, like, 2013. But I have never gotten around to playing it. It's on a PlayStation, and I had an Xbox, and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So I have been playing it because The Last of Us 2 came out this year, and I really am interested in playing that one as well. So I was like, I finally got to do it. And one of the people from Critical Role, Ashley Johnson, is, like, the voice actress of the main character, one of the main characters mm-hmm. in the game. So it's super fun to, like, hear her voice in there and stuff like that. So
do you have, like, a little synopsis about what the game's about?
It is a, like, apocalyptic zombie game, basically.
Okay.
But there is, like, a twist where if you're infected for, like, weeks, you become this crazy thing called a clicker. But it's been out for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like people know what it is.
It's more like a storyline kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I do not play, like, just shooter games.
Yeah.
I don't find those interesting in any capacity. I have to play a game with a storyline. So yeah, it's pretty cool. You play as like a older guy and a younger girl who like meet through the apocalypse and mm-hmm. just travel together, basically.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right, that is enough about what we have been doing this week. Should we just get into today's episode?
Let's do it.
All right. So, Seth Tyler Jackson was born February 3rd, 1994, to parents Scott and Sonia Jackson. He was from Summerfield, Florida, and Summerfield is a small town south of Ocala in Marion County. He had two older brothers named Scott and Stephen, and his family described him as friendly, outgoing, funny, and popular with the ladies. His mom also said that he was a hard worker, and if he needed money for something, instead of asking for it, he would go around to neighbors and offer to mow lawns or wash cars or do other chores and things like that for neighbors. He grew up in a mobile home park and loved hanging out with the neighborhood kids. They would skateboard, ride BMX bikes, play paintball, and climb trees. A real, like, Florida...
Outdoorsy type of kid, yeah.
Lifestyle. His dream in life was to become a UFC fighter and planned on enrolling on professional training when he turned 18, and his parents were very supportive of this. The neighborhood was in a lower income area, and parents were known to have to work multiple jobs in order to make ends meet, so the kids were frequently unsupervised. Seth was 15 years old and a sophomore at Bellevue High School when this story takes place. His best friend at the time was William Samalot. William and Seth would spend most of their time together and basically lived at each other's houses. During his sophomore year, in December of 2010, Seth started dating a girl named Amber Wright, who was also 15. For a while, the two were in love, as much as 15-year-olds are in love.
Right.
And they would post stuff on Facebook about each other and post on each other's walls, "I love you," and typical teenage stuff like that. And they would also spend all of their time together.
Sounds like me when I was 15. I had all these stupid boyfriends.
Yeah, it's like, I want someone to pay attention to me.
Exactly.
Seth's parents didn't really like Amber. She appeared to be a typical teenage girl, but the couple would always fight, and they thought that she was a little manipulative. And Amber would admit that she would do things just to piss Seth off or to make him jealous and vice versa. There were also drugs involved in the relationship, and they would smoke pot and sometimes do cocaine.
At 15 years old.
Yeah.
So they kind of had like an on-again, off-again relationship because they would fight all the time. And their relationship ended after a few months due to Amber cheating on Seth with an 18-year-old man named Michael Bargo. And Michael also had a girlfriend at this time. When Seth found out about this, he was obviously very upset, and the two broke up. And then Seth would continuously challenge Michael to fight, but someone always backed out. Because, you know, in high school, you always gotta fight somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Amber also allegedly told Michael that Seth was physically abusive towards her, so Michael already did not like Seth, and it's unknown if he actually was or not,
mm-hmm.
but... They were crazy as a couple, you know? So, Amber's stepbrother, Kyle Hooper, who is 17, was originally friends with Seth. But he started to get involved with the disputes after Amber and Seth broke up, especially because he was living with this Michael Bargo guy. So, Michael Bargo, Kyle Hooper, and another man named Justin Soto, who was 20, were all living together in this double-wide trailer, which was described as a flop house, which is like a very run-down, low-income type of house. And this trailer was rented out by a girl named Charlie Ely, who was 18. And Charlie's husband was currently in jail, so she spent all of her times time with the boys, and Amber would go along. So they were kind of like this group of five friends.
Mm-hmm. After the breakup, many verbal fights ensued over Facebook, where everyone would participate in calling each other names and threatening each other. You know, acting big on the internet because mm-hmm. you can hide behind a keyboard. One of the posts on Facebook consisted of Amber posting on Seth's wall, "I got so tired of you treating me like I was nothing. If you're so perfect, why don't you get over your jealousy and get a new girl you can hurt? You know I care deeply about you. I stuck with you through a lot of stuff. It takes a real man to accept the fact he got broken up with." To this, Seth responded, "We both need to just let all of this go. Yeah, we split. Yeah, it hurt, but I'm over it. I'm just not going to let Mike have his cake and eat it too." Michael's girlfriend broke up with him after this, and then Michael and Amber officially started dating, and of course, the Facebook arguing continues. There was one particular post where they were all fighting, and Seth ends up commenting that he's going to burn Amber's house down with her family inside of it.
A little aggressive.
A little much. Remember, if it's on the internet, it is forever.
Exactly.
Later on, Kyle Hooper states that this status was one of the big catalysts in what happened and why he was involved, since Seth was threatening not only his sister, but also his parents and himself. Kyle is also very angry at Seth because Seth ended up sleeping with Kyle's ex-girlfriend that he still liked. All very teenage stuff.
Yes.
He found this out because he was peeking in his ex's window and saw them together.
So he's a peeping Tom.
A stalker, probably. Yeah. In order to get back to Seth, he stole his bike from outside of the girl's home.
So, on April 7th, Seth posted another status on Facebook. This one says, "Hello everybody, my name is Amber Wright, and I smoke meth every day. I love the stuff, it makes me jizz in my pants, aka I'm a slut." So, after this post, there's a bunch of comments on it. But Amber ends up saying, "See, just like I said, Seth, stop being childish, and how the fuck did I cheat on you the whole time when I pretty much lived with you when we were together? I was with you 24/7, so stop talking shit. That's all you know how to do is get drama started. And how am I a hoe? Because I dumped you because I got fed up with you throwing me into walls. I was tired of you calling me a cunt and a whore every day. I got tired of you treating me like I was nothing." And there's more to this comment, but it's literally just her repeating the same shit over and over again. So, sometime after this little spat, Michael and Seth actually do end up fighting while at a party. And despite the age difference, Seth actually won this fight and knocked Michael out. And this, you know, crushed Michael's ego because he lost and embarrassed him because there was a big group of people around.
Mm-hmm.
So after the physical fight, again, more verbal fights, and Michael ended up saying to Seth, "I have a bullet with your name on it." After this, Michael and Kyle Hooper told Seth and his friend William Samalot to go over to this girl Charlie's house where they were living in order to fight again. When Seth and William were almost there, they heard gunshots coming from the house, so they turned around and left. And Kyle later said that Michael actually had his .22 caliber handgun on him, and he shot into Seth's direction in order to scare him off. Teenagers.
Teenagers with guns.
Right?
Poor Qua.
Like, I know he's 18 and he can legally buy a gun, but still, like,
you're still a teenager, I'm sorry. And until you're 20 years old, you're a teenager. Your numbers end in teen, bitch. You're a teenager.
And, like, there's obviously something going on with him. Like, he should not have a gun.
They are all just raging full of hormones.
Exactly.
On Sunday, April 17th, 2011, Seth Jackson was hanging out with his friend William. He received a text from his ex-girlfriend at 8:12 p.m. This text says, "Hey, can you talk?" And Seth responds, You said you needed to talk. Amber responds, well, I kind of need to talk to you about us working things out. Seth tells his friend William about these texts, and his friend tries to convince him not to go to meet up with Amber. Seth tells him that he is just going to go home instead, and that he will see him at school the next day. In reality, Seth doesn't do this because we know Seth wouldn't actually do this.
Right.
And goes outside to call Amber. During the call, they agree to meet up to talk. After they get off the phone, Amber texts, hey, my friend Charlie is coming with. I've been telling her everything between me and you, and she's coming because I need her to help through this. Is that okay? But don't tell anybody what's going on, because I want to make sure we can work things out before anyone knows. Seth responds, Amber, if you have me jumped, I will never give the time of day. So if I get jumped, say goodbye, all right? Amber says, I swear you not, Seth. I could never do that to you. I just want you and me back. And obviously these are text messages, so the lingo is kind of wonky.
Yeah, and none of them know how to spell ever. Like, they spell you, Y-U-U,
yeah,
in every single post.
I think it's an internet thing.
Probably.
To, like, say you like that. But I've seen it on the internet, I think.
It's so frustrating, like, seeing these text messages. You're, like, half the time you're like, what are you even saying?
Yeah. So Seth meets up with Amber and Charlie at their meeting point, and they convince Seth to go back to Charlie's house where they can sit down and talk. What he didn't know was that Michael had convinced his friends to kill Seth, saying, we need to kill Seth Jackson. Nobody likes him. We need to kill him. After some hesitation, everyone agreed and they made a plan. This plan was for Amber to lure him back to Charlie's house, where Michael, Kyle, and their roommate Justin were going to be waiting. Amber was supposed to text them when they got close, and then when they came inside, Justin was supposed to hit him over the head with a piece of wood, and then Kyle and Michael would come out, jump him, and Mike was going to shoot Seth.
So that's a crazy fucking plan.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's crazy that your first go-to move is like, let's just kill him.
Yeah.
He's being really annoying. Let's just kill him.
Like, not, I don't condone, like, beating someone up, but, like, yeah, why not, let's jump him, scare him, make sure he never comes around again. Not, let's fucking shoot him.
Yeah. Like, even the fighting is dumb because
it is.
Realistically, I'm sorry, I don't know Amber. She sounds fine.
She's not that cute.
Like, she's probably fine. There's no need for you to murder someone over your 15-year-old girlfriend.
Exactly. So, this plan that they had didn't work out as smoothly as they thought. Amber didn't end up texting them when they were getting close. So when Seth and the girls walked into the house, Justin was just sitting on the couch and didn't do anything because he wasn't prepared. So Seth also sat down on the couch, and all of a sudden Kyle came running out from the room that he was hiding in with Michael, and he hit Seth over the head with the piece of wood. Michael follows behind him with his gun and fires shots at Seth, hitting him in the back twice. And Seth starts running, and he actually gets out of the house and almost to the road, but Justin Soto is right behind him and tackles him, and he's shot again by Michael. This time, he's shot in the back of the head, but for some crazy reason, he's still alive.
Right.
The two then drag Seth's body back inside the trailer, and they put him in the bathtub. And Michael says, I want him to be alive because I want him to know who's killing him. Michael is then left alone in the bathroom with Seth while the others are beginning to clean up the blood that's fucking everywhere. Michael continues screaming at Seth and shooting his gun at him, but Kyle goes back in the bathroom to tell him to stop shooting and to be quiet because the neighbors are gonna freaking hear the gunshots. And Seth ended up being shot 8 times.
So the next part is going to be pretty gruesome because these people are disgusting human beings.
Yep.
So, it is unknown whether Seth was still alive at this point, because some sources say he was and some say he wasn't. But at this point, Michael suggests that they break his kneecaps. He then uses a hammer to do so and also used pliers to pull out Seth's teeth. With Seth's kneecaps broken, the group is able to fit his body inside of a sleeping bag. And some sources say that they dismembered parts of his body in order to fit into the bag, but again, hard to say. The group already had a bonfire going in the backyard, so they carried the sleeping bag with his body into the fire and put it in. The group then spent the rest of the night drinking, celebrating, and tending to the fire for hours until around 2:30 in the morning. They also spent the night using bleach to clean up all of the blood. Some of the neighbors wondered about the fire because it was so large, at some points 8 to 10 feet high, to the point where it was almost like touching the tree line. One neighbor later testified. She followed her husband outside and she saw a group of 5 kids around the fire while her husband talked to Charlie. Charlie was friendly and chatty and even invited the couple to their fire, but they didn't attend.
Yeah, because, you know, I'd love to attend a fire with a literal child burning inside of it.
Yeah. The next morning, Michael and Justin shoveled Seth's remains into empty paint buckets and hid the buckets in a dumpster until they could move them. They then got help from 37-year-old James Haven, who is Kyle and Amber's stepfather, to dispose of the paint buckets by tying cement blocks to them and then throwing them down into a rock quarry. They needed James Haven's help as none of them had a car.
So, that next morning, which was Monday, April 18th, Seth obviously never made it to school. His friend William tried calling and texting him, but Seth never answered. So after school, he went over to Seth's house. When he found out that Seth wasn't there, William got worried and decided to call Seth's mom, Sonia, asking if she knew where he was. She said that she thought that Seth was with William all day, so she comes home from work and calls the police to report him missing. She knew that he was missing and didn't run away because he was the type of kid to always let his mom know of his whereabouts, even if he was staying out all night. So the police put out a bolo for Seth, request a warrant to get his cell phone information, and start talking to his friends. And this kid, William, is like the best friend you'd ever want in your entire life. He decides that he wants to try and help find his friend because he's worried. So he takes it upon himself to go talk to Amber since he knew that she had been texting him the night before. So he goes to Amber's house and asks where Seth is and all this stuff. And she tells him, there are some things that you just don't need to know, and then tells him to leave. So he also tries to find Michael Bargo, knowing that the two of them were fighting and all this stuff. But instead he finds Kyle Hooper. When William asks if he knew where Seth was, Kyle started freaking out and stuttering and told him that he didn't know, and then he just ran away. That night, William posts to Seth's Facebook page, Seth, where are you? This is really starting to freak me out. Text me when you can. And then William spent the rest of the night riding around on his bike looking for Seth.
The day after, Seth is officially reported missing on April 19th, and this case of the missing 15-year-old boy is all over the news. Kyle Hooper was watching this broadcast with his mother, Tracy, and confessed to her that he knew what happened to Seth, saying, "That boy isn't missing. I saw him be killed." So, Tracy called the police, and the police came to pick up Kyle, Amber, and Charlie. When the police originally got there, Amber said that she had seen Seth in the neighborhood on Sunday night, but that he had gotten into a fight with his mom and left. Charlie said the same story, but also that she heard a loud bang. At one point, Charlie offers up Michael Bargo's name, saying that she also saw him outside and that he hated Seth. every time the police would ask more questions, they would get more and more information out of them. So, the three teens were then taken to the police station for official questioning.
They were all put into separate rooms, and they quickly began blaming each other. Amber's story changed, and she stated that Seth had actually come into the house, and Kyle started hitting him, so her and Charlie ran into Charlie's room to hide, and that they heard gunshots, but they stayed in Charlie's room all night and fell asleep, and then when they came out in the morning, the house smelled like bleach. And she also did state that Michael told her if they said anything that he would kill them. Kyle's first version was that Seth came into the house, he hit him with a stick and told him to get the fuck out of the house, and then all of a sudden Michael starts shooting him. And Kyle is eventually pressured enough to actually tell the investigators what happened. And in this interview, he tells the lead investigator, Rhonda Stroop, that he didn't feel bad about the murder and that Seth deserved it. After getting the whole story from Kyle, Rhonda Stroop went into the room where Amber was and basically told her to stop lying to them because they had gotten the whole story from Kyle. Like, this investigator, Rhonda Stroop, is just like, no bullshit, down to the business. She's like, stop lying to me. You're dumb.
Rhonda then put the three into the same room, where they didn't know that they were being watched and recorded. They all immediately start talking about this murder plot, and Kyle says, We did not kill an innocent kid because this kid was not innocent. He threatened to burn down my house and kill my family, and he deserved it. Amber says, do you know how many people are going to fucking hate us for this? People that don't even know us are going to be looking for us if we get out of this. Kyle asks why, and Amber says, there's a fucking 15-year-old kid murdered because of us. You honestly think people want to be around that? Do you think people think those kinds of people are supposed to be here? Hell, I don't even like those kinds of people, and I'm one of them now, and I didn't even do anything. They start talking about how Michael Bargo was to blame for everything, saying that if it wasn't for him, this wouldn't have happened, and that they always fall into his stupid traps. And Amber says, he knows he can talk me into anything. Next, they start discussing how much trouble they are going to be in because of this, and that they are going to go to jail. And at one point, Amber says, I'm not going to be out until I'm like 20.
Like, yeah, you're only going to get 5 years for murdering someone. Yep, there it is.
At this point, Rhonda comes in and tells them that they are being watched and says, you are each going to be booked with first-degree premeditated murder. Take a deep breath. You'll have no bond. You won't be getting out. This is a very serious crime. I don't think it gets much more serious than this. Rhonda later says that Amber is just like putting on a performance and is really just manipulative and diabolical. So that's two on the manipulative dinger for that girl.
So during all of these interrogations, investigators go to Charlie Eli's house and they start finding evidence. They search the fire pit where they discovered human bone fragments. And inside of the house, they found that the door to the bathtub was off of its hinges. They also found a loaded .22 caliber revolver, hundreds of live rounds of ammunition, around 100 .22 caliber shell casings, as well as a box of ammunition in the bathroom. So, like, he had hundreds of ammunition ready to go, and he had already shot off 100 rounds. So, like, where was he? Was he just shooting in the house, like, trying to prepare or something? I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So, DNA from Charlie, Kyle, and Michael were found in the mixtures of blood throughout the house. And there was blood found in the kitchen, a bedroom, and obviously in the bathroom. The investigators also went to the rock quarry, where Kyle admitted that they dumped Seth's remains. Here, they found shoe impressions, as well as impressions from the 3 5-gallon paint buckets that Seth's remains were in. And they had to use a dive team in order to find these buckets underwater as, like we said, they were tied to cinder blocks. The buckets containing the remains were sent to the University of Florida for DNA testing in order to be identified. And since the remains were basically turned to ash at this point, there had to be special testing done on them where they tested the remains against Seth's parents' DNA. And this testing showed that the remains were 63,000 times more likely to belong to the biological child of Seth's parents compared to like any random male. So this is obviously Seth's remains. At this point, Michael Bargo was wanting to go on the run and hiding from the police at a friend's house. But he was the kind of person, an asshole, who was proud of what he had done and started bragging to people about the murder, telling literally anyone who would listen. He ended up telling his ex-girlfriend's dad, a random man at the police station, and a man that he was in a holding cell with after he was arrested. The only people he wouldn't tell were the actual investigators. And when Michael was arrested, his face was beat up and covered in scratches, and he had black eyes. And he told the police that Kyle and Justin attacked him, beating him up, breaking his nose, splitting his lip, and leaving bruises all over his body, which these actually most likely came from the struggle with Seth. He also claimed that when Kyle and Justin attacked him, they stole his gun. And he told police that he wasn't even home at Charlie's house on the night of the murder. He was out walking around drinking and smoking weed. And he also tried to deny the fact that he was even involved with Amber, but they had each other's initials tattooed in their groin areas, and like Michael did the tattoo on Amber.
Nice. Amber, Kyle, Michael, Charlie, and Justin were all charged with first-degree murder. James Haven was charged with accessory to murder to helping dispose of the body. He pled guilty to these charges and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. In his testimony in Michael Bargo's trial, he stated that he did not only help dispose of the remains, but the night before the murder, he was with the group and heard them discussing the plan to lure and kill Seth. He said that he left after this because it made him uncomfortable, but he did not contact police. Kyle Hooper and Amber Wright went on trial together. Even though they were underage at the time of the murder, they were tried as adults. Kyle and Amber were both sentenced to life in prison for the crimes. Amber was tried again, as the first conviction was thrown out after evidence was allowed in the first trial of her saying incriminating statements before she was read her Miranda rights. In the second trial, she was again sentenced to life in prison. Both Kyle and Amber are eligible for parole after 40 years, and Amber was described as the most dangerous 15-year-old ever. A lot of people say that even though Michael was the one to shoot Seth, that Amber played the biggest role in his murder, and without her manipulation and ability to lure him to the house, Seth may still be alive today. Before Kyle and Amber were sentenced, Seth's mother, Sonia Jackson, read a victim impact statement to the court.
And her impact statement said, "Words cannot describe the pain and suffering you have inflicted on our family. You have taken so much from so many. The loss of our son has been the most difficult thing we have ever had to bear. It has changed our lives and the way we think, feel, and live. Our lives will never be the same, as we will never see our son grow up or have children of his own. Nor will we ever spend another birthday or holiday with our son. As I stand here today, facing children who have taken our son's life, I ask myself, they are just kids. Is life in prison the right punishment for them? The hours before any action was taken proves the kind of person they really are. They had plenty of time to think about what was going to happen. The thoughts running through their minds should have raised red flags? They say their minds are not fully developed at this age. This is true, but it does not take a fully developed mind to know and understand right from wrong. After all, a 2-year-old learns that hurting others is not accepted in our society. This was no accident. This was a planned murder that they all agreed to, talked about, and thought about. They even took steps to prepare for it. Seth and Kyle were friends at one time. Kyle even spent time in our home. Now the life you will lead will remind you that Seth did deserve to live. You helped take Seth's life, and I hope he haunts the rest of yours. The actions he carried out have changed all of our lives. We understand that his family feels that they have lost him, but he's still here for them to talk to hug, and to hear his I love yous. Let me remind them that their child is not dead. We will never have those precious moments again. The Bible says, an eye for an eye. So be thankful that you live within a justice system that does not live by this code. This is why we ask that he spend the rest of his life behind bars, because death is not an option.
At Justin Soto's trial, he took a plea deal and pled guilty to murder in the first degree in order to get life in prison without the possibility for parole in order to avoid the death penalty. Michael Bargo was considered to be the ringleader of the group and sentenced to be put to death in August of 2013. He was the youngest inmate to get the death penalty in Florida at the time. In 2017, the Florida Supreme Court allowed Michael to appeal his death sentence and be sentenced again, as the ruling was not unanimous, and the new law came into effect in Florida by then-Governor Rick Scott, that the jury had to be unanimous to sentence someone to death.
Like what happened in the Carly Brusha case.
Mm-hmm. His jury in 2013 had sentenced him to death in a 10-2 ruling. In 2019, Michael had his new sentencing trial. Kyle Hooper took the stand in this new trial, but refused to answer any questions. His defense lawyer, Candace Hawthorne, made an argument that Michael's home life growing up was toxic and didn't allow him to develop socially. The prosecution argued this by saying that Michael's sister grew up in the same household and she was fine. Before it was over, Judge Anthony Tati asked Michael if he wanted to say anything. Michael stood up in the Ocala courtroom and called the process a big circus. He told the judge that he didn't have a right to a fair trial and that he had evidence that proved he was innocent, but it was rejected by the court. He also insinuated that if he were to be executed, that it would be all on Judge Tati and that he would be killing an innocent man. At the end of this new trial, the jury unanimously sentenced Michael Bargo to the death penalty again, and to this day, he sits on death row.
Charlie Ely was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole as well. After her trial, her original defense lawyer, Jonathan Bull, was fired, and Jose Baez, who was Casey Anthony's lawyer, took over as her lawyer.
He always be in these shitty cases.
I know. I think he was Aaron Hernandez, too.
Yeah.
So, Jose Baez originally filed an appeal that was rejected and then took the case to federal court. I mean, even though he, like, represents shitty people, he gets shit done.
Yeah, he's definitely a good defense lawyer, but he is defending terrible, terrible people, mm-hmm. So
Baez made the claim that Jonathan Bull, her original lawyer, made several critical mistakes that denied Charlie the right to a fair trial, including not objecting when interrogation videos were shown to the jury that happened before her Miranda rights were read, like what happened with Amber.
Right.
And her original attorney, Jonathan Bull, was actually suspended from practicing law in 2018, but I couldn't find what he was suspended for, so obviously he wasn't a good lawyer in general.
Right.
In March of 2020, U.S. District Judge Roy B. Johnson Jr. ruled that she received ineffective counsel, and he granted Charlie's request to vacate her conviction and sentence. And she could have been given a new trial, but prosecutors agreed to let her plead guilty of a lesser charge, which was second-degree murder. Mm-hmm. And that only constituted 10 years in prison, so she took this deal. And since she served 9 years in prison, the 27-year-old was released in March of this year. After she was released, Jose Baez stated, "Charlie was left with a choice. Go home today, wait another year for a new trial and get freed then." And she chose to go home today. It's a terrible tragedy. And Charlie is just another victim of Michael Bargo and company. She feels terrible for the Jackson family. This is not a day to celebrate. And Sonia Jackson, Seth's mom, said that she's angry, stunned, and saddened about Charlie being released, because she was obviously part of it, but that she needed more time to process what happened before making any other comments.
Right. Yeah, that's really tough. But it's also tough because Charlie technically didn't, like, commit the murder, you know?
Yeah, she was, like, had a more hand an in accessory.
It. Yeah. Yeah. That crime is just terrible in general because, like, I already can't fathom murder, but I also can't fathom murdering something, like, at the age of 15.
Exactly. And it's so senseless, like, over Facebook arguments, you know?
Yeah, over, like, someone's girlfriend, you know?
Exactly.
It's just no one really... Just like last week, like, just get a divorce, you know? Just block them on Facebook. It's not that fucking hard to have these people not in your life, you know?
Exactly.
Unless they're, like, stalking you and shit like that.
And it's not like she was gonna marry any of these people, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when you're 15, you think you're in love, but let's be honest, 99% of the time, you're not. And you're not gonna marry that person.
Kids,
they're so dumb sometimes.
Yeah, and, like, don't get me wrong, I was also a dumbass teenager.
Oh, me too.
I just don't know that I would have ever helped be an accessory to murder.
No, I was too shy.
Yeah, I was too afraid to get in trouble with my parents.
Yeah, exactly. If I got in trouble with the cops, like,
I wouldn't live if I got in trouble with the cops because my parents would be so mad. All right, guys, we hope that you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, make sure you go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review.
Also, check us out on social media at Crime Binge or Crime Binge Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that jazz. You can also check us out on our website, which is crimebinge.com, or send us an email at crimebinge@gmail.com.
And
keep on binging.
Bye.
See ya.